Thank you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show host and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
It's Raising the Vibration right here on the Live Paranormal Radio Network. Please join us at liveparanormal.com and all of our syndicated affiliates, iHeartRadio.com, Google Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Podomatic, Player FM, Blog Talk Radio. The list goes on and on and on. I'm your host, Sheena Metal. I'm a psychic medium. I'm an interfaith minister. I'm a 27-year talk radio host here in Los Angeles. And this is Raising the Vibration. Raising the Vibration is actually an outreach of a nonprofit movement of peace and love and kindness and unity that I started in 2016 to carry on my mom's teachings and to honor her memory after her passing. Both spiritual and humane. My mom believed that the world needed more peace, more kindness, more love, more unity, and more of a vibrational uplift. And I sort of carried that on in her absence. This show, radio show, is not only about all four of those things, but it's also about ascension, evolvement, inspiration, and again, love. Basically, how are you raising your own vibration? What are you doing to take that to help yourself to evolve spiritually? And then how are you using those great new things that you've amassed to inspire others? And then how are you throwing love into it? Because love is really all there is. We don't live in a perfect world. We're not happy all the time. Bad things happen to good people. But it's important that those of us that walk in the light continue to move forward and do what we can to help others, sometimes directly because of the things that have been done to us. That's what Raising the Vibration, the radio show, is about. And every week on the show, I gather people that I love and adore, who I consider bright lights in this world, lovely, smart, deep-thinking people who are survivors and moving forward on their path, trying to make the world a better place. And my guest today is certainly a beautiful example of that. She's a wonderfully talented everything, writer, producer, author, actress, chef, animal advocate. I mean, just an all-around fantastic person that I love and adore. And you are going to love and adore her as well. I think this is her first time on this show. She's done many of my shows. Please welcome to the show the wonderful Christina Leese. How are you, my friend? It's wonderful to have you here.
I'm very well. Thank you for having me.
Good. Did you like my whole inspiration beginning? I thought the whole time she's thinking, oh, Lord, I got to deliver inspiration now.
That's exactly what I thought. I'm like, oh, God, that's intimidating.
I know, and I just continually, I think, part of our friendship, right, is that I'm always just like, rah, 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 you got it in you, kid, and you're always kind of like, I don't know, but then you always pull it out at the 11th hour when we're on the starting line, you always pull out the good stuff.
Well, that's a flattering assessment. I don't know if you realize, though, that yesterday, I think, is like the 8-year anniversary of my doing your vagina monologues.
I love it. Should we tell that story? I really kind of rah-rahed you right to that, didn't I, buddy?
Yeah, you did. Yes, you did.
And wasn't it the most wonderful thing, and weren't you fantastic?
I was not fantastic, but it was a wonderful thing. And I wrote a big piece on my blog about it. It was a very sort of the building up to doing it. I was going through a really hard time in my life at the time. And I was really in a dark place, and being around all those women and hearing those stories was exactly what the doctor ordered for me. So it ended up being very, very positive, even though I was terrified.
Yeah, you were wonderful. I will say that. It's the Madonna monologues is an interesting thing. And I hope once we have officially moved past COVID, I can do that again. It's, in my life, and I don't know about yours, but in my life, a lot of my very bad experiences in life have been with other women. And I think the way that women sometimes treat each other is terrible. The thing I love about the monologues is that all these women, right, from all different walks of life get together and become a family for a couple of hours. And then the energy of that, some of the energy of that stays with you for the rest of your life. And even the first time I did it in Manhattan as an actor, not knowing anybody there, being the West Coast kid who came in, I still talk to people from then. And then because of that producer, knew the producer in L.A., and then I did it out here in Culver City, and then I fell in love with it and wanted to start producing and directing it myself. And there's been a little bit of that good energy comes everywhere with you. And it's all based on women being great to each other. I've never had women fight during, never had anybody not get along. It's just, there's just kind of a magical energy to it. And sometimes that's just what you need, right? And it's interesting because knowing everything you were going through in your life at the time you agreed to do that for me, in 2016, I already had it scheduled and had to do it 2 weeks after my mom died. So I was in not good shape at all. And I thought about you and how you tough through it. And that helped me to tough through it, right? Because, you know, that's what my,
well,
that's
what
my Irish mama would have wanted.
Yeah, but what I was going through wasn't nearly as hardcore as that. My goodness.
But still, everybody's hardcore is everybody's hardcore, right? It was a devastating thing for you at the time, as it was a devastating thing for me. And it helped me. It healed me. Being in that environment helped me to get through it. And I always say I had two plays I had to bring into my theater company. I had that. And I had to throw my birthday party at the Improv for 200 people. And that really got me through that really bad 2 or 3 month period after someone dies. And it saved me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think sometimes the right thing comes and falls in your lap at the right time. Because, you know, life is hard in general. For sensitive people, life is amazingly hard. And most artists are either sensitive or empathic. Many of us are. And you need the little things to kind of keep you going, right? So you can tough through the other stuff.
Well, yeah, that's true.
And you have a way of, you create beautiful stuff for yourself. I mean, when you created your short film, and I mean, even before that, right? When you got involved in working at film festivals and then made your own thing, and then it became very successful, and then that became a book. And that's kind of just like staying in motion, right? You don't let – remember we were kids, there was that poster that said, don't let the turkeys get you down. I mean, it's kind of like – it's really a mean thing to say about turkeys. But, I mean, it's kind of like you just – in times where you feel stuck, you create something and keep moving. And I think that makes you a champion.
Well, my goodness, you just flatter me left and right.
Well, it's true. It's what it's what I think. You know, I think you're amazing. I think there are a lot of people in their careers or their emotional lives, when they go through something tough, they just develop this attitude like, fuck it, I don't give a shit. And I'm just screw everybody, and I'm either going to be a jerk to everybody the rest of my life, or I'm just going to sit and whine and complain that nothing's getting done. Well, sometimes you have to change your own energy, right? And you do that by going out and creating something that keeps the energy moving. And certainly your Bathing in the Single Girl film, it re-kicked your energy up, right? It restarted everything.
First of all, defeat is something I'm not comfortable with, and so just accepting it is something that I would never do. I lose at things a lot, but I don't walk away feeling defeated. I have been told in the past that, you know, my time as an actor has expired and I should, you know, examine other paths forward to make a living, and that was something else I was unwilling to accept.
Good.
And sort of white-knuckled my way into somehow manifesting it again. I just come from nothing. And so receding back into nothing would be the worst possible outcome for my story.
Yeah.
And I can't let that happen.
I think I think receding back into where you came from is devastating for anybody's story. I think that we're not meant to just walk away with our tail between our legs and say, okay, I don't need to have any of my dreams anyhow. I don't deserve it. We're supposed to kind of keep fighting, right? And we're supposed to keep providing that energy. And you certainly did that, and it led you on a path of being in motion, right? It's physics. An object in motion tends to stay in motion. You kept yourself in motion until the bigger entertainment world came back and scooped you up again. But in the meantime, you were in the indie entertainment world, and you were still moving.
Yes, and I would like to say that somebody asked me once that they were, you know, in a horrible depression, and you know, what advice would I have? And I would say, then do something in service, you know, whatever that might be.
Yeah.
Foster a dog, you know, volunteer some time somewhere. Like helping, that gets you so out of your own stew. And that's really one of the most important things. And so the film festival thing that sort of fell into my lap that I did for almost 20 years, I did that a lot. It was a lot of work. And I eventually was doing it year round for like 6 different festivals, and it was all for free. I didn't get paid a cent, but I was always around. Of course, I enjoy watching movies, and that's, programming is primarily just watching movies. And, but I was always just neck deep in other artists' work, and that's inspiring too. And when I had no control over whether I was working, I still got to feel like I was involved in a creative community, and that kept me from just succumbing to, you know, fuck it and giving up, you know?
Uh-huh.
It's sort of remarkable that virtually no work came to me, not none, but virtually none of 20 years of being around filmmakers, you know? It sort of flies in the face of it, who you know, and that kind of thing that everyone thinks Hollywood's about, which does, there is elements of that, of course. But there's so many other things that I haven't gotten work from anyone that I knew, you know, before, you know, like the people that I get work from now, because I know them, I didn't know them the first time they gave me work. And now I know them and they keep giving me work, but that wasn't how it started, you know? So like you said, keep moving forward is it's whatever way that might manifest is the most important thing. Because, yeah, I mean, complaining
is
unappealing even to me. Not that I don't get sad and frustrated, but, yeah, giving up is just not my thing.
Yeah. It's so weird, isn't it, that because I always want to give my friends work. Whenever I'm doing anything, I always think, like, who do I know that's amazing that I can give work? But I have found that that's very interesting, that I've been involved in a lot of projects, and oftentimes people don't do that. And it's I don't know what that's about. I don't know, but I do agree that is a thing. I think people are always thinking of – filmmakers get a definite mindset of what they think somebody should be in a role in a thing, and they're going with that instead of I'm an energy person, right? So I'm always thinking, whose energy do I want in this project? Whose energy will fill out this project? And when I start to cast something, that's how I do. That's how I do the monologues every time. I do it by energy. Where an audience is going to want whose energy in this part today, and who am I going to want to come in, and what other actresses are they going to work well with? That's kind of how I work, but I don't think that's how all creative people work. I'd rather work with people that I love. Yeah. I'm sorry.
There's a combination of reasons of why this, you know, might happen that way, but I think making a living as an artist and in any you know field of it, whether it's painting or writing or acting or directing or whatever, it's almost impossible to make a living as an artist. So if you're say you're a director and you have an opportunity to direct a piece, I think people get aspirational as to who they want cast. They want to cast above their pay grade, you know, and be elevated by the people that they cast. So if you could cast your
yes.
friend that you've known for 20 years that you know is fantastic, but you could also get Scarlett Johansson or even try to get Scarlett Johansson, you're going to try to get Scarlett Johansson. So because that it sort of wraps you in some safety and escalates, you know, elevates your position. And I think also there's a little bit of familiarity breeding contempt. I think there's know people really well, and directors don't see you that they know you, they almost know you too well to see you as a performer anymore. You know, and say,
yes.
"Oh, I know her."
Yeah. Yeah, I can't.
I can't not see her when she's doing a role. Now I just see her, not the role, and that can cloud people's ability to.
Yeah, that's really strange. I had that happen a lot when I first became a radio host, and then people would be like, "But you're a radio host." I'd be like, "Well, yeah, but I've only been a radio host for 2 years. I've been an actor for 15." And then really with the vagina monologue, people walk up afterwards and go, "Oh, you can actually act." It's like, well, yeah, like I wouldn't be in this if I thought I sucked. I would just let somebody else do it. I'm not here to like force people to watch me be terrible. But
exactly.
Yeah,
we still pigeonhole
people, right?
Yeah, but I have the great, great, great fortune of, twice in 2 years, you know, having old employers come back to employ me again. And currently with Don Mancini, who created the Chucky franchise, and I met him when I was 24 and he was 26. He's an especially loyal creator. I did Child's Play 2 when I was 24 and it was the second one he'd written and he was 26. He is so loyal to actors that not only is he bringing people back, but like the little kid, Alex Vincent, who was 6 in the first film in 1988, he's in the TV show now at 41. Playing the same character.
Yeah.
And then there's other actors that, you know, Chucky, what he does for a living is kill people. And sometimes the story will have an actor that Don has become very fond of end up, you know, meeting their demise on screen. That doesn't mean that actor is done with the Chucky franchise. That just means Don's going to write a different role for them and bring them back again. I mean, Devon Sawa died. He played twins in the first season of Chucky last season, and both of the twins were murdered. And Devon Sawa is coming back. So, you know, I'm not going to give away who he's coming back as, but like,
that's fantastic.
No way, Devon, you know, and so it's an incredible loyalty that Don has that is rare, and I'm very grateful to be in his stable.
Yeah, I love that. I love creators that their projects become like a family, that it's very important for them to use talent that they trust. And I also think, when you're dealing with a genre thing, and horror is certainly, you know, an example of that, fans want to see those people. They want to see the actual people from the original films. They want to know, because they follow everybody. They know every single character, every actor, and they love that. So if you're recasting everything and not using anybody or not paying homage to what the original was, it's a thing they don't necessarily like. And I think that's something that the internet has helped us learn a lot about, right? Because it used to be guys in suits made all the decisions. And now we're actually starting to listen to what the fans want. And what the fans often want is that beloved person that they've watched.
Yeah, but that can backfire too. In that, 2 years ago, in 2019, 3 years ago now, when 90210 came back as that rebooted BH90210, they brought everybody back, and they struck gold in that they got both Shannon Doherty and Jason Priestley to come back. Neither of them, they were a million to one to get either one of them, let alone both of them. And they did, and they got the entire cast back, and fans were mad because they weren't 25, you know? Like, we don't want to see 50-year-olds doing blah, blah, blah. I was like, well, what do you expect? Like, we're 50. So that's weird. There was no loyalty there, and I was shocked because I think the show was great, and I think the show was great, and I can't believe fans gave it the finger, but they did. And you know, and in other news, the Chucky fans are much more loyal and do, like you said, want to see the old characters.
Yeah.
They don't care that Alex isn't 6 anymore, and he's 41. They're psyched about that. So, but the studio doesn't necessarily trust that that's true. The studio gives Dawn a hard time about these bringing us, as we are called, the OGs back, and fans love it. So, but you never know. I was like on pins and needles waiting for the Chucky fans' response to this, because I was like, oh, I've been here already once, and I don't want to get my hopes up, because fans are unpredictable. And that's why guys in suits are nervous and make bad decisions, because there's no formula that is guaranteed to work.
Absolutely. No, absolutely true. But like I said, I think horror is a different kind of thing. I think it's they love the characters. I think it's a different kind of genre. I think the 90210 folks are a little more mainstream television folks, the fans. They're a little bit different. Mm-hmm. I think that horror is a genre that was founded by and watched by and about outcasts. And I think that outcasts tend to be much more loyal to the people that they like. They're not worried about what's cool or, oh, God, I'm watching this cool show about Beverly Hills, but I'm embarrassed because the people are 50. You know, I don't think there's that in horror. Horror is everybody's an outcast, right? And in that respect, I think the genre is beautiful in that way.
I agree. And having, you know, I do conventions several times a year, and I, you know, you're neck deep in fans for 4 days, and they're great. With almost without exception, it's an incredible environment, very family-friendly environment of people that are respectful and just really devoted to the genre and their particular, you know, everyone's got their favorites and their least favorites, but there isn't another, except for Comic-Cons, there's not another genre, so like the big superhero stuff, the things that Comic-Cons, you know, focus on, there's not another genre. There's no like drama or romantic comedy conventions, you know, where fans of those genres get together to see, you know, what's her name, it's the daughter of Goldie Hawn or, you know, Matthew McConaughey. Those things are probably too big to ever show up at a convention. But, you know, like there's no romantic comedy conventions. There's no, like, you know, dramedy conventions.
Right.
There's horror conventions.
Yeah,
horror
conventions, it all started with horror
sci-fi,
and sci-fi, right? It all started.
Yeah.
Yeah. But again,
sci-fi's also
outsiders.
Yeah,
it's outsiders.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because in those genres, they've done so much for television, because it was in those genres that you started seeing interracial couples, interspecial couples, LGBTQ+ people.
Yep.
Was it true, right? Star Trek had interspecial relationships.
Yeah.
But all these things that started the American viewer that lived in a very straight white Christian viewing world to start thinking of things beyond that realm, and sci-fi and horror hitting the young people, right? So the young people were growing up with a different idea of what the face of America looked like. And I think that was that those genres have done so much. And also on a spiritual level, right? To get people to start thinking about, you know, more things in heaven and earth, like what's out there and what's possible and what could be and how could it be? And you know what I mean? I mean, I think it's those two genres have done so much for film and television and books. We just bring in different kinds of things.
By reality. Yeah. Cause they're not restrained by reality, so they can experiment more. So
right.
Yeah,
but what
I agree,
even is reality? I mean, reality itself has become kind of a blurred, you know, who's reality? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's.
Yeah. Well, that's.
It's a lot different than it used to be.
In political time we're in right now, whose reality is the question.
Right. I mean, what is reality turning the world back to the 1950s? Is reality, you know, a world where there is nothing beyond the three dimensions? Is, you know, is reality, it's all very out there now. Everybody has their own opinions. And as we get closer towards discovering how science and spirituality are sort of two sides of the same thing, the idea of what reality is even going to get more complicated. And shows like a horror film or a Star Trek, those really help people to kind of begin to wrap their brains around things, you know, and I find horror, sci-fi, fantasy genre people to be very free-thinking and very open and very wonderful and very embracing, right, of you before the Chucky series, very embracing to see something you did when you were 24. And understand that you're not 24 anymore and be totally okay with that.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
is, I think, a cool thing, you know? So what does it feel like to step back into in the last 3 years, right? Two projects that were very big for you in your 20s and be back with everybody again. I mean, was it the same kind of family feeling that you remember from then?
Yes. Well, more so, actually, because everyone's 30 years older and matured and, you know, mellowed in many ways. And gratitude is a bigger part of everybody's day-to-day, you know? I don't think gratitude is something a lot of 20-year-olds spend a lot of time thinking about, and you do when you're in your 50s.
Sure.
There's that. The 90210 experience was tremendous. I live with Jason for a long time, and Jason's wife is like one of my best friends, and so there's real family there for me. And then the cast that I've known for 30 years, since they were like kids, you know, I was 26 doing that show, but a lot of them were much younger. It was really warm and really great. I was one of a billion guest stars they could have brought back in a big role in that show. There was, 10 years of guest stars. They had a lot of people to pick from, so I was super grateful to have been chosen. And everybody was super kind, and everybody was, you know, we want to make this show really great, and it was supportive, and there was no shenanigans, and it was awesome. The Chucky return was weird because of COVID. So, go to Toronto, which was the strictest area of Canada, and I had to do a 14-day quarantine, and you have to get tested for COVID 3 times a week, and the crew, everybody's dressed in burkas, and you can't, and there's zones of who you can have contact with, and you can't hobnob. There's no craft service table. There's no community. There was no community on that set. So I come into it knowing Jennifer Tilly and knowing, Fiona Dorff and Alex Vincent and Dawn, and a couple of the puppeteers, but beyond that, if I didn't already know them, it was impossible to get to know them, which was frustrating. So I'm hoping that the second time around that the restrictions are much less, you know. You don't have to get a COVID test out of the country anymore. You can prove that you're vaccinated. And I'm just hoping everyone's not wearing masks and separated into pods. Like, but we'll see, you know.
Right. When do you go back?
I go back in the middle of June.
Okay. All right. So we're getting there with the COVID. I mean, I think there's still restrictions, but I think we're getting close to a lot of it being we're getting close
to I went to the post office.
It, I think.
Yeah, the post office, no one was wearing masks the other day. It was really weird to see postal workers with, you know, inside the building with no masks on. I went to the supermarket the first time like 2 weeks ago without a mask on. It felt like I was naked. In fact, I kind of liked the mask because you could just like look like shit to put a mask on and no one could tell it was you. Now you got to get your shit together again before you go out in public.
Yeah, I kind of liked it when I did my church services because I only had to do my eyes. Like, I didn't have to do anything with the rest of my face. I thought I was going to hate it, but then I was like, oh, it's like a third the makeup. I kind of love it.
Yeah, it's like pajamas to your face.
I still wear a mask when I go to stores. I think it's just habit. Be in big stores, I feel like I still should, especially because I live most of the time down here in Orange County, about an hour south, and nobody ever wore masks down here because we don't believe COVID exists down here.
Right.
So
right.
I think it's important that I not be part of the problem. So I do still wear my mask when I'm out. And COVID is still a thing because I just got it again 2 weeks ago. I haven't had it since March of 2020. So I think it's not done yet, and we have to remember that.
No, it's
but,
not. I think I have an
But they do
immunity.
Have good drug for it.
I'm knocking on wood
good for you.
Right now, but I have done many a convention in the last year where I walk around, put my arm around 300 people a day and, you know, handle their money. They hand me their sweaty money out of their sock and, you know, and I take it and it's like there's nothing dirtier in the world than money, you know, like literally dirty, germ-filled, passes hands 1,000 times a day,
yeah.
You know.
Exactly,
so,
yes.
And they're handing me their things from their home, their Chucky dolls, whatever, to sign posters they have. And then I come out and I give them a hug and, you know, take their money. So that's a lot of contact and a lot of tempting
things.
It's
a lot of
and I don't know how
Chucky dolls.
I,
and, yeah.
It's a lot of just, yeah, a lot of crowded convention halls. So I've been exposed a bunch. I had a super spreader dinner event at my house about 6 months ago, and everybody at the table got COVID except me. I don't understand, but
wow.
So talking about it in the
news,
it's a phenomenon where there's some people.
Well, part of it's probably genetic, right? I mean, you have some Celtic genes, and that's some good stuff.
I do.
I have a Celtic immune system, too. Don't you have aren't you part something Celtic? Irish, English, Scottish, Welsh, something?
Irish.
What?
I'm white. I'm white as fuck. I'm just like Irish, 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 and then some Swedish.
Okay. Okay. Good. All right. So Irish. There you go. I thought we had had this talk that you were Irish because I am too, but I didn't want to push unless I was wrong. Yeah. So Irish people, right? I always say this because my immune system is really good as well. Of course, I did get COVID, but I also had a partner that had it twice and gave it to me. I always say that the Irish, we would like work in a coal mine for 18 hours and still be able to have 10 children when we got home. So we have that mm-hmm. kind of immune system that's really good. But I also wonder if it has to do with you being vegan.
I don't think so. I think that I eat pretty clean. That's true. Vegan isn't necessarily healthy. I mean, as far as, like, I could eat processed bullshit, fake vegan chicken and all that, you know. The chicken chicken nuggets, whether they're vegan or they're... No, I do occasionally. Yeah, I do.
Right. They're basically salt and chemicals. Mm-hmm. And gluten.
Yeah. It's like, it's chemicals. And then occasionally when I'm, like, at a convention, I will have to, you know, default to being vegan adjacent and or just vegetarian and eat cheese because some of these places there's nothing you can have except because they'll like modify the menu because the crowd is so big and there's like six things in the menu and it's bar food. So it's like buffalo wings, you know, hamburgers or a pizza, and I'm not going to spend 4 days in a hotel in Louisville and live on iceberg lettuce salad. And then the dressing isn't even vegan.
Yeah.
And the dressing's not vegan. So, you know, default here and there. But, I'm a pretty healthy person. I've always worked out. Since high school, I've been a workout person, and I always eat relatively well. I drink a lot. I drink a lot of wine. But I think that I'm holding up pretty well. I think it's – perhaps. And I do think there's something to be said from coming from sturdy stock, though. I do come from sturdy stock. And I think that might be a function of poverty, which is the opposite of what you should think. Like, you know, but I think people using hand sanitizers before COVID hit, all this like hand sanitizing and was like, you don't get any immune system built up if you're ever exposed to anything.
I
like,
agree.
Even
during COVID,
I touched the
shopping cart. I put both my hands on that shopping cart because I'm building my immune system up. No, I feel the exact same way. And I do think a lot of it's genetic and a lot of it's what kind of stock you come from. And I do think that, you know, people who come from more of a sort of poverty background that come from laborers, you know, the ones that didn't have the good immune systems didn't survive to procreate. I mean, that sounds terrible, but, you know, a lot of this country was built on the backs of the Irish, and the ones that couldn't hack it couldn't come home and have children. So, you know, that is a thing. And I come from, interesting, my mom grew up extremely poor, coincidentally enough, in Louisville. And I mean, I do think that that's part of it. But I also think it's living boldly. And I'm going to say this because now I'm going to get woo-woo on you, but I think living in fear dings your immune system. I think to be somebody who's always fearful that the germ is coming, that this is coming, this person's going to mug me or kill me, and just living in a constant place of fear literally lowers your immune system because your emotional and spiritual immune systems work.
Yeah, because what you're doing, because worrying is praying for what you don't want.
Yeah, yes.
Praying is putting energy out for what you do want, right? I pray that, you know, my stepdad recovers from leukemia. I pray that I want. But worrying, going, oh, my God, I'm going to lose the car. Oh, my God, I'm going to get COVID. That's a form of praying, too.
Yeah.
You're putting the energy out there.
Yeah.
And often with way more intensity. People feel fear so much more viscerally than they feel hope. So watch out what you worry in.
Absolutely. And, you know, I always tell my clients this, that universe is a mirror, right? So if you're constantly saying, you know, my husband's going to cheat, my husband's going to cheat, my husband's going to cheat, then whoops, your husband cheated. What have you been saying for 6 months? I mean, it's you're basically saying to universe,
you're manifesting.
Yes,
you're manifesting
negativity. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know
a lot of people that lived in this terrible... Yeah.
I'm sorry?
I cut you off. I'm sorry. I just have a really very powerful ability to manifest, so I need to be really careful where I put my head, you know.
Right. Well, that's good, but a good ability to manifest is a fantastic gift. But, you have to stay positive.
You got to be careful with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I've done the opposite.
And I think manifested the negative?
Of course. I keep cutting you off.
Well, that's okay. That's fine. We're good. I saw that when COVID hit, and maybe it was because I'd already had COVID, but nobody knew what COVID was when I had it. I just thought I was going to die from the flu. But I saw all these people being so paranoid about everything, and I thought, you know what, that's not good, because if honestly, I don't mean to sound cryptic, but if spirit wants you to have COVID, you're going to get COVID. I don't care if you never see anybody. So
I agree.
You can't run from the inevitable, right? People who try to gear their lives towards nothing bad ever happening to them. It's not a reality. You can step out on a curb and a bus could hit you. You can't live in constant fear. So maybe your attitude of, you know, bring it on, I'll touch the doorknob, you actually were building your immune system. And maybe this is helping germophobes everywhere, COVID.
I don't think so. But I'm not saying that I was like, I was super mask conscious and I was doing my social distancing and I didn't see anybody except for my core people. Except for the supermarket that I went to almost every day because it was my only excursion into actual real life. And then I'd get in the car and I'd wash my hands with the hand sanitizer and I would but then my whole keys, your keys have so many nooks and crannies in them. And you handle your keys with the same hand you handled the cart. And it's just dumb. So I made my gestures at it when I was very respectful of mask culture and again, in the beginning when social distancing and not crossing, you know, communities, I have people that live in my house with me and I only saw them and their friends because their friends were always here and my friends weren't. So I was I stayed with the family that was handy, you know, and didn't see my people that were headed before then, been my family until things lifted. I'm not saying I was just willy-nilly running around, you know, like a jackass. I was respectful, but not to an extreme. I didn't get groceries delivered and leave them outside for 4 days. So that, people were doing with their Amazon boxes, afraid to touch them and bring them in. I was bolder than that, but
I know. But I think part of that with me was that at a young age, you know, in my teens and twenties, I lived through the AIDS crisis and losing so many of my friends. And, you know, I remember when that was the big fear. Oh, God, you know, don't touch a doorknob if a gay person touched it because you're going to get the AIDS.
Right.
So I think that I living through a plague on a less, you know, not as media publicized scale helped me to realize that you don't, you know, there is such a thing called air, and air does kill viruses, and you don't have to put the boxes outside for 4 days, but people just kind of lost their minds. And I think people are still very, I mean, I think human beings innately are very fearful of their own mentality, mortality. And that was a Freudian slip. And I think that, you know, people still have a lot of that. Oh my God, the COVID's coming, the COVID's coming. It's not as bad as it was, but
died.
I remember
a million Americans have died. A million Americans, not people.
I know.
Americans.
I know.
That's insane. Remember when, you know, Trump was bragging about, we'll keep it under 200,000, and that sounded like
right
impossible, but it was impossible. Look what happened. I mean, and not everyone that died was a COVID denier, you know? So.
Yeah, no, that's very true. No, and the thing about COVID is that the first couple days you have it, you're sure you're going to die because the fever is so high and it comes on so strong. And I had forgotten what it was like until I got it again 2 weeks ago, and I was like, I'm going to the hospital because it is so bad. You just kind of have to live through that first 24 hours of the shaking and you know, I was in a hot tub, turned up to 102, freezing, and the shaking in the hot tub turned up to 102. So, and then thinking, I'm never going to be able to get out of this hot tub. I'm never going to be able to get out of this thing. I'm going to die.
Yeah.
So it's
until 107 degree day happens.
Right. Exactly. It's a scary thing, but I hope, and you know me, always the cockeyed optimist. I hope that we've learned something as a species from everyone in the world having this experience at the same time. I hope that we've learned how fragile we all are as a species and how anything can happen to any of us at any time. And we need to spend more time focusing on that and less time hating each other. And I know that everyone's not going to come around to that because that's people, but I hope some people came around to that during that time when we were all sitting in our houses thinking, you know.
Well, unfortunately, I think the opposite happened. Everyone had way too much time on their hands and way too much time to sink their selves into the internet because there's nothing else to do. And because of internet algorithms, people, you click on one thing and you get down in a wormhole that can lead you into very extreme places. And I think we saw the result of that in Buffalo recently. Radicalized from just deep diving out of boredom. And the fact that, you know, when you click on a certain thing, whether it's whatever it might be, whether it's like yoga or I hate Muslims, whatever you click, you start getting led deeper into that direction. And all the things that pop up are either yoga or I hate Muslims, whatever path you were on, you know, it leads you deeper into whichever path you were on. And fortunately, there's not a lot of yoga extremists doing anything crazy, but there are in the other direction. So I don't know how much we learned. I think we learned to be I don't know what we can learn. This goes back to earlier in the conversation with whose reality. And I said in the current political climate, whose reality is really the question. It's the most important question. Because one, in my opinion, one reality is the reality, and one is this fear-based lies to stoke people into frenzy and to vote against their own best interests. So, it's complicated. And I think that COVID, I think this people deep diving on the internet has made it worse for us as a community, not better.
Yeah, I do think that people do like to go down a rabbit hole and then pick up whatever reality they works for them. Instead of, you know, they stop caring about facts at some point. And it's Buffalo's been, it was scary. I spent a lot of time yesterday watching the news, and it reminds me of, and if I'm offending anybody as I liken this, it reminds me of the sites where, you know, people go and look at the child pornography. And I know they monitor those sites because they think everybody they can catch early on those sites is a child that will not get pulled into pornography. I don't know if that's possible with this kind of a thing, but it certainly seems like somebody should be monitoring these groups that are sort of grooming people to become these radical, extreme, racist, violent people before it happens. There has to be a way to do something before it happens.
Yeah, it should also maybe, like, you know, not sell assault rifles to 18-year-old kids. If you can't drink a beer, you shouldn't have an assault rifle.
Right. I mean, that's a given. Right. But it's the same thing, right? I mean, whereas somebody who, obviously we know somebody who's got a child pornography thing has something in them that's missing and not right. Somebody who has so much fear in them that deep diving on the internet could cause them to murder people in a market, there's a not right in there. You know what I mean? And maybe in all our lofty observing everyone on the internet now, we need to start trying to find the folks that aren't right before this kind of thing happens, because it's just happening so much.
Well, that could, yeah, and that's a more complicated thing. It's outrageous, but
yeah.
I don't think that patrolling everybody on the internet is a more complicated endeavor than it might seem,
of
and
course.
It's also all kinds of privacy issues.
Yeah.
So, you know,
sure.
More importantly, we should be like just trying to track better who's buying these things. But
absolutely,
like, and then this kid in particular. I mean, the cowardice of this kid. Not only did he stalk this neighborhood and pick this supermarket specifically because of its demographic, but to go in it. He killed a bunch of senior citizens.
I know. I know. I was just going to say that. Yeah.
It's you're 18 years old and you're blowing up. You're blowing the heads off people in their 70s and 80s. I mean, what is that? That is so twisted. Not that it would be better if they were younger.
Right.
It's just exceptionally bizarre to think you're doing the world a service by killing people's great grandmothers.
Well,
I don't know how these
easy
brains...
pickings, right? I mean, I think easy. You know, you're not gonna go someplace where you're scared somebody's gonna come at you and take your gun. I mean, it's easy to kill old people. I mean,
so
it's
let's
extreme
talk about
cowardice,
the size of the
right?
fear center. Yes, so the size of the fear center
yeah.
in the brain like that has them believe that there's a threat from that community, and that you also need to. Assault rifle, and then you also need to go kill the oldest people in that community. Like, there's so many levels of cowardice there, I can't even deal.
Yeah, and somebody
you
that
you could have
age.
Killed them all with a fucking screwdriver. Like, they're old people, you know?
Right.
I'm not laughing, it's not funny at all. The level of his cowardice,
yeah.
and that he's not being vilified in right-wing media, and they're trying to deny that he's got manifestos and stuff, whatever. And I'm sure I've offended everybody, you
of
know,
course.
But...
No, that's okay. No, not everybody. No, certainly. I mean, it's look, there is, I was just saying last night that when I was watching this news coverage that if I was a Republican, and I'm not, I'm very open about the fact that I'm a lifelong Democrat, and I didn't approve of what had happened to my party, I would be fighting, like, to bring back the Republican Party before it escalated into this slippery slope and say, this is not what we're about. This is not what I'm about. And,
yeah.
but everybody is so scared and everybody just falls in line, you know? And
they're being lied
and
to
I've
in
seen...
all fairness to them. They're being lied
sure.
to by massive news, cable news networks that they think are actual news networks. So it's almost not their fault that they're being told every day, all day that you and I are wrong and that we're liars and, you know, pedophiles and that they should be afraid of, you know, whatever,
mm-hmm.
replacement theory. So when you perceive a news source as, and also let's keep in mind that the majority of this country is not wealthy. The majority of the country is working class and middle class. And they're not watching cable
yes.
news 8 hours a day. They have kids and three jobs, and they're busy, and they might get a snippet of some news some here and there. And they're not, you know, necessarily, they don't have the energy or the time to spend as much time on watching the news that I do, you know. And that's no fault of
right.
their own. That's
yeah.
just being a human being with a family and in a country that doesn't take
right.
care of the weakest citizens well enough. So.
Right.
My
no, you're completely
so
right about that. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's true.
So
I just keep hoping that someday all of the violence will, somebody will say, people will start saying we've had enough. And I do, and again, cocky optimist, but I do believe slowly but surely people are coming
no.
around to it.
They did not say it after the kids, the fucking kindergarten kids.
I know.
the kids
so
that
awful.
Are killed in, was it Connecticut? What's that town?
Yeah, in Newton. Mm-hmm. Newtown?
Newtown, yeah. I mean, what, 26 five-year-olds got killed? I mean, if that doesn't change your perspective, nothing will. I mean, they're literally babies. So.
Yeah, the same kind of cowardice that killed the old people, the same kind of...
Yeah, again,
you know,
an assault rifle.
It doesn't take
like
a whole lot to kill a bunch of five-year-olds with an assault rifle either. Yeah, I know. You're right.
No.
You're completely right, and I agree with you. I keep praying for a better world and trying to encourage as many as I can to follow the light path, hoping that some that don't believe that will sort of see the power of positivity and change their perspective. I'm not counting on that that's going to happen. But that's kind of my work. And at least it feels good to be trying to do something, you know?
Yes. I think D.L., is it D.L. Hughley? Hughley? How do you say his name? D.L. Hughley?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think Hughley. He posted an old clip of Tupac Shakur that I saw today. And Tupac was saying, look, I'm not going to change the world, but I'm going to inspire someone else to change the world. I all I can do is shine a light on what's wrong. I can't fix what's wrong, but I can shine a light on it, and the next person in line can fix it. That's paraphrasing, but
love
it was
it.
A really powerful little
yeah.
speech, and I think that that's a great
beautiful.
Takeaway. So even if you can't do it
that.
Yourself, you can still keep shining a light on it.
Absolutely. And on that note, my friend, thank you for being here. Let's do this again. Where can people find you online?
Oh, everywhere. Instagram. It's Christina Lise McCarthy on Instagram. What I really like people to do, actually, is if you look up online, up and down and Life in the Vagina Monologues, it is my blog piece I wrote about doing
nice.
Your show. I fucking cried and cried and cried as I wrote it. It was a really gut-wrenching piece for me to write. But it has a happy ending. And besides that, I'm on Instagram and my book is on Amazon. Bathing in the Single Girl is on Amazon.
I love that you suggested that because I cried when I wrote it, said when I read it because it's wonderful. It's beautiful. Go
Thank
do
you.
That, my friends. Thank you, my friend, for being here. Thank you for being so wonderful. I always appreciate having you here with me.
Happy to be here. Be safe.
I'll talk to you soon. You betcha. The wonderful Christina Lise, everybody. She's wonderful. If you missed those links, SheenaMetalSpiritual.com. That's how you find me and everywhere online at Sheena Metal. And until I see you next week, seek peace, live in love, lead with kindness, embrace unity, always raise your vibration. And I'll see you next time. Thanks for being here and thanks for being a part of this show. It's Raising the Vibration right here on the Live Paranormal Radio Network at liveparanormal.com, my movement, raisingthevibration.com. I'll see you next time.